Dr. Powell has a deep gift where she's able to take extremely, not just complicated, but dangerous ideas that could be applied for evil, and how can we, as people of faith, redirect the process to make sure that discoveries on cutting edge of science are applied for good. And her heart is service for the Lord. He's gifted her with a great talent in science and in communication, and I know that God's going to speak to us through her tonight. She holds a PhD in virology from Harvard University. She is a biomedical research scientist who conducted research at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and Harvard Medical School. She was also a research fellow at Massachusetts General Hospital and was a research associate at Boston University. She is also an ordained minister with the Assemblies of God and a frequent writer and speaker on bioethics and issues of science and faith. She is the mother of Allison and Melissa. Hey, girls. It's so neat to see you guys traveling together. I'm loving it. And she is author of Questioning Your Doubts, a Harvard PhD Explores Challenges to Faith. Her book will be available after the service out in the foyer. Give a warm welcome to Dr. Christina Powell, please.
Thank you very much.
It is so good to be back preaching at Central Assembly of God. I love this congregation. It's a warm congregation, rich in history, and it's such a treat to be back here among you tonight. Thank you to each and every one of you who have come out on a Sunday night to be a part of what the Lord would have for us this evening. And I just want to pray for you before we get started. And Heavenly Father, I just ask your blessing upon each person who came here today. We know it's a sacrifice of people's time and schedule to gather here, but it is never a mistake when we choose to gather with one another and to gather in your presence. And Lord, I would ask that even as we talk about faith and science in those areas, that there would be a level of ministry that would go beyond just the intellectual understanding of this topic tonight. Because we know that each person sitting here has unique needs that only you know what they are, and that there are ministry needs, there are hurting hearts, there are burdens that we will be carrying into Monday morning. And I would just ask that you would come among us with the presence of your Holy Spirit, and even as we are talking on a topic like faith and science, it would also be a personal time of ministry somewhere in the words that are said that would meet the unique needs that each person has come into the sanctuary with tonight. Richly bless them. Anoint the words that come forth tonight so they are not just words that come from a person, but they are really you speaking to your people whom you love tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. I start out with our topic slide, which is why I question my doubts, thoughts on faith and science. And it's a philosophy that you'll hear more about. And in a lot of times, people question their faith in academic circles, or they think that you should be questioning your faith, but what if instead of questioning your faith, you questioned your doubts? Which means, of course, you think through your doubts, but instead of tearing down your faith, you tear down your doubts. And of course, it was that thought and that challenge that was the very seed that became the book that Dr. Tennyson has mentioned, Questioning Your Doubts, the Harvard PhD Explores Challenges to Faith, which is kind of like a long journey through all the experiences as well as the intellectual challenging topics that we face in our Christian walk that could possibly tear down our faith, but instead how we can build up our faith through difficult circumstances, through the intellectual roadblocks that would come against our faith, that instead of being something that tears them down, it can be something that builds them up. But today we're going to really spend our time looking at the relationship between faith and science and the different ways that those two subject areas can relate, and look at some individuals and some ideas about how they should relate, and then I will present my own thoughts about how to integrate the two. Now, I go to the next slide. I've been a little bit of a tourist. And walking around the Evangel campus, I snapped a few pictures and snuck them into my slide deck. I hope that was all right. And the first thing I noticed was the building that has truth above the door. Come back. And let's talk a little bit about truth written on the door there. And I come from an institution, Harvard University, with the motto Veritas, which means truth. You guys have translated it into more clear language, but in both cases, we're talking about truth. And that concept is very important to where we're going tonight, because whether we're talking about our faith and how those biblical principles affect every area of society, or we're talking about the truth that comes as scientists take a complex problem, break it down into testable hypotheses, go into their laboratories and try to find answers, we are talking about truth. And I have never seen that division between the truth that we seek through science and the truth that we would understand in the spiritual realm, because if we see God as the all-powerful creator, he has created the world that science studies, and he has created the moral guidance and the guidance for our relationships with each other and with him that we would recognize in ministry and in the spiritual domain. And really, we are talking about truth, and truth should be consistent with itself. So the truth we see from science should be consistent with the truth we find in the Bible. And of course, as we know, the biblical verse that says what we see through a glass darkly, and when we see him face to face, then we'll fully understand. And so I think that there are times through each period of history that science sees things partially, that we from a theological point of view understand how to integrate science and faith imperfectly. But if you take away that human element, I believe that the truth that we find, if we were doing science perfectly and if we were doing theology perfectly, we would find agreement between the two. And so it is with that thought that we approach our topic. Next picture. Our next tour of things that I liked while walking around the campus was this. I love every scripture that's on there. I walked around, but I found the one that I really liked, and it says, with God all things are possible. And I really like that one, because if we're talking about faith and science, faith is believing that all things are possible with God. And whether that is asking that God will help us to make sense of the things that we don't understand, or have peace about the unanswered questions that we will face about some of these topics that we'll talk about tonight, I believe that that's possible. But I also believe that there is still a room for the supernatural and the miraculous, and it may not be something that science can grasp, and we'll talk about that more, but there's still a place for it, because indeed with God all things are possible. All right, so next we have our next picture, and this, you know, we talk about belief in dinosaurs. We're going back to one. That's a picture of me when I was in an undergraduate, actually. So we've got an ancient artifact here tonight for you. And when I was studying, and from my earliest days of studying biochemistry, as you see in the picture, all the way through my study of my doctorate topic in virology at Harvard, I studied viruses primarily for their ability to help us understand the process of cancer in the human body. But I also, learned about all kinds of viruses, from the kind that makes you sick to your stomach when you catch the flu, to the cold virus, to every type of virus that we have known academically. But my own research interest when I went into the laboratory was really using viruses as a very handy tool to understand the growth processes in cancer. But what I heard, especially in my early years of study, was whether or not, I was always asked whether or not studying science, you know, made me question my faith in any way. And so my response to that question was that it does not. It actually enhances my faith, and we'll talk more about that. Now we move to our next slide, And we're going to define faith a little bit, because if we're talking about faith in science, let's find the biblical definition of faith. And says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. And that's Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1 through 3. And that is sort of the polar opposite of how you might describe the scientific process in many ways, because this is saying that faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. And what I was trained to do as an experimental scientist is to be certain of everything except that which I saw. When you go into the lab, you go into it with uncertainty. You make up a hypothesis. That's your best starting point for your discovery. Then you go test it, and you make observations, things that you see, things that you can capture, and you write those things down. So we see that the process of science is looking very much at the natural world, where we see that the process of faith is asking us to go beyond the natural world in things we do not see. So they are very different processes in that respect. And science has to be driven in the natural world. There's nothing wrong with science when science focuses on the natural and not the supernatural, because that is the domain of science, to try to understand that which is repeatable in the laboratory. And a miracle is a rare event, and it doesn't repeat very well. So we wouldn't actually want to study miracles as a science, because you can't go and make a miracle occur at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon just so you can study it, or if you did, you wouldn't be a miracle, right? So we have to be careful, I think, from a spiritual and theological point of view, to not say, oh, well, science doesn't take into account these things, because that's not what science is supposed to do. All right, so we move to our next slide here, and we have Rene Descartes, and he is very helpful. How many of you have GPS systems that you use, or do you use some type of, you know, Google or Apple Maps or your favorite program, right, to get from point A to point B? I didn't have to worry about this time, because people were driving me everywhere. And if they weren't, I just kept bothering Dr. Tennyson, and he found a way to get me from point A to B. He was my GPS for this trip. But for those of us that use a GPS system, we actually have this man whose picture is before you to thank, because he came up with the Cartesian coordinates, those X and Y axes of your algebra nightmares in high school. But it is that plotting things on X and Y axis that helps us know exactly where we are, so that we can map ourselves from one place to the road we really need to be on to go where we need to go. But his other contribution, from a philosophical point of view and not so much from the practical mathematical point of view, was this phrase, I doubt, therefore I think, therefore I am. And so he worked through this handy-dandy little proof, which we will not go through tonight, where he determined that God must exist because of his own ability to think, that had to come from somewhere. And he knew he could think because he knew he could doubt. And a doubt is actually a form of thinking. Because if you're sitting there and you're doubting something, you're actually mulling it over in your mind. And yet a doubt is imperfect, because there is a lack of certainty there. Because if you were sure of something, then you wouldn't be doubting. So he saw a doubt as something that showed an imperfection in his own thinking, and realized that there must be that perfect standard of someone who has no doubts, because he has all knowledge, and that would be the existence of God himself. Now, of course, with modern philosophy, there's people who have all sorts of different ways of looking at that, and we're not getting into that tonight, but we're simply looking at one man's journey in his time and place in history, and how he worked out his understanding of science with an understanding of spirituality. And for him, he was somebody who worked through mathematical proofs. So his way to faith was to have a similar proof in his own mind, like you would do in a geometric proof. You know, this side of the triangle, this angle matches this angle, so therefore these two triangles are similar type of thing that you do in geometry. He did that for his faith. And I think it's interesting because God makes himself real to us in the language that we understand. If you're a musician, then perhaps it is more through worship than even the rest of us that you will get in touch with your spirituality and strengthen your relationship with God. And some people think that maybe if you're in science, that that's pulling you away from God. But historically, that is not necessarily true. That people took their understanding of science and philosophy in their scientific era, and they found out ways of working it with their faith, as this man did. He found a way to think that matched his mathematical thinking and came to peace with the existence of God. And so that's the interesting contribution that he makes to faith and science for us. And so we come to the next slide, and I have the phrase, I don't question my faith, I question my doubts. And that's that phrase has a little bit of a warning on it. It's not saying that I don't think through my faith, but it's talking about an attitude that says, I am not going to use intellectual knowledge to tear down what I believe. I'm going to use intellectual knowledge to build up what I believe. Are you with me tonight? Yes, amen. And I think that's an approach we can all take regardless of our profession in life. Let's take the truths that we get from our Monday through Friday reality, whatever that may be, and maybe some of you work different days. But how can we take what's in our profession and actually use that to strengthen our faith rather than distracting us from our faith, rather than tearing down our faith? So that's really what I mean by that phrase. It's a philosophy about taking the very things that some people think would tear down your faith and allowing those things to be building blocks to build up your faith. But let's look a little bit more about the relationship between science and faith. And there has been historically, and it makes sense, three different ways of having these two disciplines relate to one another. The one that gets the most press is the conflict between the two because it's exciting. And as we all know, if you're trying to get a headline for a news story in a newspaper or a magazine or perhaps a blog post on the internet nowadays, you want something that has a little drama in it, right? So science and faith holding hands and being all happy doesn't really cut it, but it's kind of exciting to watch the tension between the two. And I have always believed that it is for that very reason that you see people play up the scientists who are against faith, and you see the people play up the people in the world of theology who would come against science, because you get that drama. But in my own journey at Harvard and at other academic, interacting with other people at other academic institutions, I found that in the private lives of scientists, while it may be true that people in the highest echelon of science are less religious than those who are not in the highest echelons of science, I have met many believers across a variety of Christian denominations who are practicing research scientists. So I haven't seen in real life those people that we see in the media, but in real life, people are finding ways to integrate the two. So the other approach is that they are complementary with each other, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. And that's sort of like saying the colors of Christmas of red and green, they're complementary. In other words, they don't come together, but they sort of contrast with one another and have separate approaches. And you can satisfactorily solve some of the faith and science dilemmas that way, but I think you haven't worked hard enough if that's where you stop. And I believe that that's probably where most of the presenters at our conference would agree. Let's go one better from let's go past the conflict, let's go beyond just simply complementary and move to the third part, which is finding ways in which they are compatible with each other, even if they are at odds on specific issues. And that's why I really enjoy seeing the different people approach these topics at the conference, because it's a viewpoint you don't often get to see in either Christian or secular media. So let's go talk a little bit more about the conflict between science and faith from a historical point of view, and that'll be in our next slide. And I talk about the William Draper thesis, but Draper was a very interesting individual, the kind that we may have lost to history, some of the things that he did. He actually he was one of the founding members of the American Chemical Society, and he worked on actually perfecting photography techniques so that you would actually get wonderful portraits of people's faces. And that was very hard to do because they would have long exposure times of like a minute. And do you ever wonder why when you look at all those nice old daguerreotype-type photos that no one is smiling, you know? Do you feel like everybody was sad in that era? But what it was is they had to hold that pose for so long to get the exposure that they needed to have just a simple at-rest type neutral expression on their face. But he actually improved some of the processes there that made it possible to have more realistic facial expressions in photography. And he did this in the mid-19th century. And these are some of his positive contributions. He made other contributions to understanding a lot of things within the field of chemistry. However, one legacy which is unfortunate from the point of view of my talk tonight is he did publish a book emphasizing the conflict between faith and science, and it sold very, very well and was very popular, went into its 10th printing, and set the tone in a lot of our budding academic institutions, all the budding universities that were being developed in the mid-19th century and onward, of seeing science in one point, that is the wonderful way that we explain things through logical means, where faith somehow was falling short and causing us to not fully use our reasons and faculty to embrace the realities of this world. And I think that lingered long into the 20th century. And my feeling is it's not now until the 21st century that a lot of people are revisiting those old ideas and realizing that we've grown in our understanding of science and perhaps even in our application of theology, that we don't need to get stuck in such an approach. And then, of course, the whole flat earth, where people were always telling the story of Christopher Columbus almost not making his discovery because the theologians were believing in the flat earth, and the situation's a lot more complicated. It was more in the mathematical calculation of distances, but it was just another way to cast religious leaders in an anti-science negative light. And no matter what the historical facts may be, the attitude set a real tone in our culture for seeing science as something that was here to save us from the delusions that religion would bring. And it's most unfortunate, and I think it affected our secular educational systems for 100 years or more, even 150 years or so following, and that is unfortunate. And I think the same thing, we tell the story of Galileo and the Catholic Church. It was not so much completely the scientific tension between Galileo and what he was seeing when he was looking through the telescope, as so much there was a little bit of personal, political, relational politics at work, as we find behind the scenes of probably everything. But how this goes into the popular culture, again, is as a plus for science and as a negative for the realm of faith, and that's unfortunate. And in more recent times, there have been a whole bunch of books, such as Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion, basically tearing unfairly down at the concept of faith and belief in the Creator as something that makes us somehow intellectually inferior if we believe in the existence of God. And that is unfortunate, because there is a rich heritage at all of our universities. I can speak most freely about Harvard, where we have a theological tradition there alongside a tradition of inquiry in all the different disciplines. And one may, from a very big picture standpoint, realize that a part of American education has always been the training of ministers that started a lot of our educational institutions, and how far people may say these institutions have left their original missions or where they may stand on social issues. I'm simply saying that there is a value in these institutions for recognizing that theology still has a place. And it was more in some of our land-grant institutions that were being formed that we had the more negative view of theology form. And it's unfortunate, and it still lingers with us today. And one of the books, Daniel Dennett, which he wrote a book in 1995, and he brought up a metaphor of the skyhook versus the crane, which we'll see in the next slide. And now people have taken this metaphor and they apply it to computer programming. And so let me explain it to you. It's basically saying that in life you want the crane, not the skyhook, whenever you're trying to explain things. Because what a crane is it's something that's sitting solidly on firm ground itself, and then it's picking up things and carefully stacking one layer of facts upon another, or bricks, or whatever it's picking up. But from a analogy point of view, it's stacking one idea upon another. And so people say that when you look at science and how science explains the world, science is like that crane. It sits on the nice, firm foundation of previously determined facts, learns more facts from new experiments, and stacks them on top of one another to explain the world, and therefore is a nice, solid way to approach the world. And then it is mocking of any type of explanation that evokes a miraculous view, because the skyhook, as you can see, you're wondering, where's that skyhook coming down from in my picture there? And that, of course, is the whole point of the illustration. The skyhook is something that's coming down from who knows where to help you up. But that is what faith is. We are believing that we're not simply bootstrapping ourselves to solve the problem of human sin and human weakness. We're not finding enough discoveries to somehow make ourselves better, but we need something outside of ourselves. We need our Creator to reach down in His love and mercy and pull us up. So I don't see this as necessarily an analogy that should be left as something that would mock faith, but maybe we can turn that around for something positive, that yes, it's great to try to, through self-help and through other approaches, make ourselves better, but we're not going to get too far up. Because if you look at that crane, you will see that it can only go so high, right? You see the boom at the top of the crane? And if you walk underneath, how many people have you ever walked underneath a crane when they're doing some construction around here? Yeah, and you look up and it's pretty foreboding. It's hanging over your head and you see that thing coming down and you think, wow. But that's only going to lift you so far, right? Because it can't reach all that far, where the miraculous skyhook, which may be mocked, which is faith and belief in something greater than yourself, it can go as high as it needs to because it's coming from a heavenly source. So I like to kind of turn that upside down a little bit if I can. But nonetheless, this is an analogy that people use to contrast faith and science and emphasize the importance of science. Now there's another approach, and that it brings us to our next slide, and that is looking at science and faith as complementary. And the late Stephen Jay Gould talked about non-overlapping magisteria. It's another way of saying there's kingdoms, if you will. There's the kingdom of science, which is the realm of facts and theories. And then there's the kingdom of faith, which is the realm of questions of ultimate meaning and moral value. And this at least is an improvement, I think, over the conflict point of view, but I don't think it is quite enough. And I think he came and he found a nice way for on a university campus to keep the nice chapels and the theology department safely there and in their place, while at the same time having the science laboratories over there doing their thing. And you were here and you're there and we're all fine because we're not getting into each other's domains. But we have to get into each other's domains. Life is a little bit more complicated. because science will do different things, such as we talked about in the conference. You know, what if we are now able to go in there and edit genes easier than ever before because of some discoveries in 2013 that makes this process very doable and pretty inexpensive. And what used to be a very expensive process of sequencing someone's genetic blueprint is actually pretty easy to do and pretty cheap, relatively speaking. So we'll be able to do all kinds of really cool things in science, but we, I think, need some input from the realm of theology and moral value. We don't want to be asking moral value questions over here that never actually affect science policy over here. And in the same way, I think that some of the discoveries of science can inform our faith. We are not basing our faith upon science in any way and detracting from biblical revelation. I'm not saying that. But I think some of the discoveries about what science can show us about how we're fearfully and wonderfully made as human beings, as we learn more and more about the human body, as we learn more and more about the intricate balance and the ecosystems in our planet, that these things can actually create wonder and an enhanced desire to grow closer to the Creator and therefore crossing over into science. So I don't like to keep the camps completely separated personally. That's my view. I'll let you form your own. I like to think that they are compatible. So I come down more with the individuals who we will meet in next this evening. And one who I've always liked was Michael Faraday. He lived from 1791 to 1867, so I never met him personally. He was a chemist and a physicist and considered the best experimentalist in the history of science, and he was also a preacher, which is kind of cool. So I think I've related to him because I have done scientific experiments, probably not on his level, and I've preached. But the fact that one person could do both and find no tension between the two is just really, really cool to me and always has been. And he had a philosophy for both aspects of his life, which I really, really like, and I recommend it to all of you. And that is, he said, without experiment, I am nothing. He wasn't going to go on other people's hearsay. Now, recognize that in his time, it was probably possible to go home to your lab and test everyone else's hypotheses. But with the body of scientific knowledge we have today, there has to be a certain point where you are not always repeating other people's experiments. You have to just read the scientific literature and make a judgment on the paper. But in his day and age, if somebody made a discovery, he wasn't ready to say if it was true or not until he went home and tested it. But I like that diligence. I like that thoroughness. I like that I'm going to see for myself attitude. And in the same way, in his spiritual life, he wasn't going to just take what other people said about the Bible that was true. Not that he didn't respect the people who were spiritual leaders in his life, but he knew he had to read it for himself. And so that, of course, I know you have a good pastor, and he loves when you listen to his sermons, I'm sure. I know I like when you listen to mine, but I think both of our hearts would be broken if you didn't go home and actually pick up the Bible and reread whatever passages we preach from yourself during the week and check what we said against the scriptures and also had your own personal time of seeking what God would say to you. And so that was Michael Faraday's spiritual attitude, that he believed that he would test his science and he would believe that in the spiritual realm he would listen to the truths that other people present, but he would go check it against the Bible in the same way that he would check a scientific fact against experiment. And I really like that about him. And he talk some more about him in a minute. But another person who is still living but I have not met is John Polkinghorne, and he's was born in 1950. He's probably going on 86 now, and he's a theoretical physicist and also a theologian. But he is someone who has found a way in his life to blend both of those aspects together. And on any particular issue, scientists find different ways, scientists, theologians find different ways to put things together. So I'm not saying that I go along with everything that everyone believes, who I mention as an example, but I like the attitude of finding a way to make both realms of truth agree with one another. And our own Francis Collins, who's running the NIH, born in 1950, does the same thing. He finds a way to have compatibility between both of these areas, and I think that is so key to do. And so I just have a quote from Michael Faraday that I would like to actually say. I gave you one: without experiment, I am nothing. But he also talked about speculations. He had a very strong faith. And he said, speculations I have none. I am resting on certainties. I know whom I have believed, and I am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed unto him against that day. And this is a quote that he gave near the end of his life journey as he was drawing his human life to a close. So after having lived out his rich life of science and faith, for him, faith was as much of a certainty as his best scientific finding that he would have. And he rested on a firm foundation of belief in God. And that is a good example for us to follow. And what I like, the quotes I like from John Polkinghorne is, God is not a God of the edges with a vested interest in beginnings. God is a God of the whole show. And that is so important, because I think sometimes in talking about faith in science, we can get lost in the first few chapters of Genesis and just kind of drilled. And not that it's a good idea, and we had some great people who addressed these issues. But faith in science is so much more than just figuring out how we're going to treat the first few chapters of the Bible. Faith in science compatibility is for everything from the first chapter of Genesis to the last chapter of Revelation. It's for figuring out how we're going to take our scientific discoveries and make them beneficial to mankind and not bringing harm. It is for understanding how we can enhance our faith through the wonder that every single field of, say, faith of science brings. And there's a cool publication that I wrote for once called The Behemoth that's been brought out by the Christianity Today folks. And it's a little publication that all it actually does is takes the topic of science and looks at it through Christian eyes, whether it's looking at, one little system of the body and just saying, wow, isn't this amazing? And I think there's a room in the faith and science compatibility dialogues for just taking any scientific discovery, looking at it as a Christian would view it, and just saying, wow, what a mighty God we serve. And I think that's an appropriate way to blend faith and science, and it's a cool thing. And he said, I am a very passionate believer in the unity of knowledge, and we talked about that earlier. There is one world of reality, one world of our experience that we are seeking to describe. And one of the things that I had a chance to talk about in my time at Evangel was we talked about the genetic, the environmental factors, and the spiritual personal responsibility factors that go into how we behave. Because I don't think we separate our physical health from our mental health, from our spiritual health, that we are one unit, and there is a relationship between all of this. And on that, I would agree with him that our whole being of spiritual, mental, and physical being interrelates with one another. If you are in good spiritual health, it's going to help your physical and mental health. If you are experiencing a physical difficulty, it may make you irritable socially, and it may even make it harder for you to take care of your spiritual health, because you're just, your physical strength is waning, and you have to work that much harder to pray, to read the Bible, to grow spiritually. So we are one person. And Francis Collins, my quote from him would be, we need to bring the power of both the scientific and spiritual perspectives to bear on understanding what is both seen and unseen. In other words, he is not dividing science to only be relevant to what is seen. He thinks that it can help and improve his spiritual walk, and he is also realizing that his faith should not just be cloistered away as something you do on a Sunday that doesn't impact your day-to-day practice of science. And I think that, too, is a wonderful concept. And he also said the God of the Bible is also the God of the genome, and that's pretty cool since he headed up the first sequencing of the Human Genome Project. Now we have a little more time, which is great, because we're going to go ahead and talk about one of my favorite illustrations. It's not mine. It's borrowed from the astronomer Arthur Eddington, and it's the problem with casting the scientific net for spiritual truth. And basically, what the story tells is, let's suppose you all come back with me to the greater Boston area, and I take you up the coast, and we get on one of those nice fishing boats that they have, and you can go out and you go out in the ocean a little bit, and we're going to go fishing for some bluefish or something like that, and we're going to cast the net. But let's suppose that we made the assumption that we had a net with like about 3 inches by 3 inch mesh, and we cast the net out, and we waited, and we pulled our net in, and then we said, I am going to study what type of fish swim in this part of the Atlantic Ocean. And we looked, and at the end of sorting through all of the fish that we brought from our boat trip that day, we decided that only big fish swim in the Atlantic Ocean because there are no tiny little fish that were in our net. What's wrong with that conclusion? There were holes in that net, right? So if there was a little itty-bitty fish, he didn't come home to be fish dinner for me because he swam straight through the hole in the net and kept going in the Atlantic Ocean. And what it's saying is that sometimes we don't have the right scientific tools to capture spiritual truth. It's not that science isn't powerful. Science is very powerful for understanding what genes might contribute to cancer. It's very powerful for understanding the metabolism of the food that you eat and how it nourishes your body. It's very powerful for understanding exactly how you should put the structural load on a bridge so that it's not going to fall down when you span a river. It helps you build skyscrapers. It does a lot of wonderful things. But if you take these tools of science, the scientific method, and you try to apply that to answering questions of meaning, of purpose, of love, of is there a life beyond this life, science just doesn't have the right tools. Spiritual truth are like little fish. They'll swim through the net of science because science is not equipped to answer those kinds of questions. And I think this helps a lot of times when we have something and we feel that the two haven't been compatible. It's not that they're in conflict so much as that science is not capable, at least where it stands now, of asking the kind of questions that would get at spiritual truth. And I know one of the things I often look at is when people do prayer studies, for example, and I think it's kind of cool when scientists think about whether or not prayer would have an effect on human health, but it's a tricky thing to try to put a scientific experiment around something spiritual. Because, for example, if I'm studying gravity, I know that if I were to drop something right now, in the appropriate amount of time, it's going to land on this platform, right? And I can do that again and again and again, and it will happen each time. But I do not believe that prayer is a mechanical type of thing. That's not where my faith is. I don't pray a certain way and tell God what to do and get an output out. It's not like I put a quarter in the bubblegum machine and I get a piece of bubblegum back out again, because we serve a sovereign God. And yes is a good answer to a prayer. Maybe is a good answer to a prayer. Not now is a good answer to a prayer. And if you've lived enough decades on this earth, you realize that no is sometimes a really good answer to prayer. Sometimes the very things that we are praying for are things that look good, but given another decade or so of life, you realize that if God would have said yes to that prayer, your life would be someplace else. And the no that closed the door, and now you're living in a whole different part of the country, At the time, it was difficult, but you're glad. It was a no to go and study at a certain place, but then you went and worked someplace else. You lost the job that you thought you really wanted, but then other doors opened and your life went a different way. Ministry opportunities changed. Things happened, and dare I say, for the younger people, a relationship that you really thought was supposed to go down the altar didn't, and at the time it was a heartbreak, but 20 years later, when you're with the spouse that wasn't the person that was the no back then, you're really glad that God said no when you prayed, right? So the problem, if we study prayer like we would study gravity, gravity doesn't have a yes, no, maybe, or later. At least not in the way that I've experienced. It has an acceleration that's going to happen the same every single time. But if I study, if I'm praying for someone in the hospital, will they have a quicker recovery time? I would hope a lot of times that they would. But God isn't mechanical in that way. So that would be one example of many where if scientists try to study something spiritual, it's not going to lend itself to a scientific study. If, you know, when we try to understand what happens if, I mean, you can study certain things such as people who attend church more tend to have healthier outcomes, because that's more of a scientific question. But if you try to study how God's going to interact with humanity, God is not an impersonal force. God's a person, and he cannot be put in the box that science would need in order to study him. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. So that is one of my points there. So the next part, next slide. There we go. We have our doubts, and they come oftentimes because of intellectual questions in science, but most of the time they come because of life experiences, those delays, disappointments, and disillusionments that we all pick up at different points along the way. And a lot of times when I see people on college campuses that are working through faith and science issues, sometimes they're legitimate and sometimes science is falsely used, I think, as a way for people to push back a relationship with God because they've had some type of a disappointment. You know, maybe it's been one of those things where they prayed that a certain relationship would go forward and it became a no, or there's some other hurt. And so I think when you speak to people and minister to people along faith and science issues, there's the intellectual questions and then there's the deeper ministry issues that are often hiding behind all of the, well, I don't believe in God because science disproved him, conversations that you may hear. But I'm as we come close to our time for questions and answers, I'm going to leave you with the rest of the verse from Hebrews chapter 1. And it says, without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. And to me, that's a really active type of faith. You have to actively believe he exists, and you have to believe that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. It's not a passive faith. It's not just something that you assent to. It's not a, yes, I agree to the facts of the Bible, but it is a relationship. It is a seeking and pursuing of knowing more about God. It's a very active pursuit, and that is similar to the pursuit that a scientist will make for scientific truth. A scientist does not simply take facts in a textbook and leave them there, but they are actively pursuing and pushing back the boundaries of knowledge every single day when they conduct their experiments. And so, in some ways, that's the way our faith needs to be. We need to actively push back against those things that would tear our faith down and say, I'm going to actively pursue and God. I'm going to get closer. I'm going to put time in. I'm going to do what I need to do to know him better. And I think anyone who's going through a journey of doubt, whether it's intellectual doubts due to the questions that may come from learning science or life experience, that there's a process of doubt plus growth gives you a second chance that leads to faith. And I think some of those people who we talked about experience that, and certainly, you know, Francis Collins tells the story about how he went, and he was actually on a hike by, saw some waterfalls and realized, you know, that just the majesty of God and understood the Trinity in a way that he never did before. It was a spiritual experience as well as a science one. And even though he had scientific training that would have predisposed him toward atheism, God orchestrated circumstances and a minister in his life that gave him that second chance to grow toward faith. And he has been a great voice in this whole issue of compatibility of faith and science, for at least saying that we should pursue an understanding of God. So I guess I would close by saying my challenge to you would be, as you live out your life, whether it's coming up with a difficult intellectual question to answer or working past an experience you had, to realize that I don't think God is angry with us when we have those doubts. He's not angry with us when we feel sad about things. He's not angry with us when we sit as the students and faculty and guests did at a conference such as the one that was held, and ask questions and try to work through things. I think that's all good things. But I don't think we should stay with doubts. I don't think we should stay with questions. But we should use that as a process that helps us grow closer to God and move in the direction of richer and deeper and more stronger and powerful faith. And that's what I would like to end with. And I know your pastor is going to come up and guide us through the rest of this evening. And thank you so much for having me.
Can we again thank Dr. Powell for her excellent presentation tonight? Let's see, Matt, if you'll go to this far one, maybe there, you can catch both those sections. And Brian, if you want to hit this one, and then Mike will kind of hit those two sections, that would be great. And they'll just kind of roam the aisles. We only have, really, to honor our children's ministry, we have about 8 minutes. So how about real quick, like, you have a question, Floyd? Matt will get that to you, and
We are devoted at Central Assembly. We want to study to show ourselves approved. The issue is that we find ourselves cast into arguments where we don't know the science, and we find ourselves foundering. Do you have any rhetorical sort of go-to position? Because there's so much that's happening in research, you just flat can't keep up with it. So if there is a defense for some crazy assault, you probably haven't heard of it. What's the rhetorical balance for person who wants to serve the Lord with all their heart but just don't have the ammo?
So in other words, you're pursuing your faith and yet you're wondering how to handle these different issues and you don't even have the tools?
No, I think it's different. It's a rhetorical thing. You're in conversation with another.
Okay.
And they are assaulting your faith and you find yourself drawn into their side of the argument, you know, stupidly, instead of saying on your own turf.
I think that's true, and that's where oftentimes I think too, you have the spiritual sensitivity to see if they're real, if this issue is really what's bothering them, or there's more to it than that too. And sometimes backing off and just trying to see what's driving the hostility that they may be experiencing toward faith too. Sometimes there's a deeper spiritual issue, and then I think it's perfectly good to say what every scientist should say, which is, I don't know, but you know what? I'll try to get back to you on that issue and then do a little research and come back. Because the truth is, we don't know. And even in the highest echelons of science, we're always realizing there's things we don't know. And certainly in putting together faith in science, there's no clean answer. And I think we learn more theology and we learn more science. And, you know, a lot of times in our apologetics, we come up with apologetic answers for science where it stands now, but then science is a moving target. 10 years later, science has advanced its understanding of a particular issue. And so, like you said, we're always learning and growing. We have to move with it, because the answer that was great 5 years ago will be inadequate today.
That's good. Anyone else? Just raise your hand real quick. Like, anybody else? Okay, Pastor Mike. Julie?
We hear so much about the fierceness of the higher level universities such as Harvard against Christians in science. Have you found that to be true in your case, or do you feel well accepted?
I feel very accepted. Some of the most warmest welcoming I've got to my book has come from Harvard. It resides in Harvard's Theology Library. And I've had actually a fairly warm welcome, because the interesting thing about Harvard is there's this flexibility toward new ideas that comes from being on the cutting edge of research. So what may surprise you is they are open to novel things, such as somebody integrating faith and science in a new way. It's actually something that's cool and welcomed rather than rejected. And I think maybe that's the challenge. It's when we're on this lower level, as you might see in high school science or in early undergraduate science, that's when you have the set way that people approach questions with pat answers that make it very hard to find compatibility between faith and science. But at the highest levels, people are open to creative ways to approach it and actually quite welcoming toward people of faith.
That's great. Brian?
I had a question, and it seems like the traditional view between faith and science has often been more of a question about scientific method and spirituality. In your own experience, are you seeing that dichotomy is really between faith and science, or in the scientific community, or are you seeing a rise in acceptance of spirituality, just not necessarily Christian faith?
I think there is a rise in looking for the bigger narrative story, and sometimes that trend toward looking for a bigger overarching story to place all of our scientific facts in includes a greater openness to the spiritual story of our lives than I saw maybe 20 years ago. I feel, for example, when I look at today's faculty members as opposed to the faculty members that would have taught me as an undergraduate, I think they were a lot more hostile toward the Christian faith or any spiritual viewpoint, where I'm seeing the younger faculty members actually looking for creative ways to tell the larger story of the human experience that includes a human realm of faith and spirituality. So I am hoping, and I think it's true, that today's students coming through the university actually have a better climate for faith and science than some of us older individuals did.
Follow-up to that, then, does that change our approach to how we deal with that particular question if there is an acceptance towards spirituality, not necessarily Christian faith?
Right. I think so, because, like I said, I think people are looking for stories that explain our human experiences, and that's where we get back to the very biblical concept of, you know, what is it that we have to offer? Well, we have to offer the Word of God. We have to offer our testimonies, right? And so I think people are very open to hearing a person's testimony. And our willingness to share our own experiences is less threatening. It is not having a debate so much, which used to be more popular, I think, in the past. But it's just people will be open to listening to your own experience of faith, and that can create spiritual thirst and hunger in their own lives. But I think that's a good way to go, is to simply present your faith just as, you know, this is how I have experienced this, and that's non-threatening and fascinating, and it's from there that you can begin to branch out.
One more. Dr. Mike?
Dr. Powell, I'm suspicious that a driving force for the book you wrote may have been based in an experience of yourself where you had a doubt that led to a growth in faith. Would you care to share an example from your own experience?
I think I never really had that conflict between faith and science so much that I had to work through, but I think to a large degree in my spiritual journey, I saw sometimes from the realm of faith being very like an irrationality. Sometimes it would be a part of people's faith life, and so I was drawn to science because it was clean and simple and clear, and it was that that tension of seeing how I could embrace the miraculous while at the same time stay grounded in science that I was seeking to balance. And I think my book was hoping to do two things, was to take people who are so excited about spiritual things that they have a disconnect from the practical element and bring them more into the practical element, and take those who are rejecting any faith story at all and bring them into embracing an openness to faith. It was my desire to bridge those two worlds, those who would separate faith away from any rational understanding of scientific discoveries and those who would see science as the be-all that ends all, and try to pull them toward each other, if at all possible. That was my dream, anyhow.
Thank you, Dr. Powell. That's awesome. Would you be willing to just step down here in front?
Yes.
And I'm going to ask some ladies to come forward and just get around her, and we're going to close in prayer tonight. How many thank God for the gifts that he's given this woman? Amen. Just praise God. Let's stand together. And I just think a fitting way to end this Sunday night and this wonderful day would be to bless Dr. Powell and just thank the Lord for her and the girls. Father, we just thank you for this woman, for the gifts that you've given her, Lord, the uniqueness, the mind that you gave her. We give you praise. We give you honor. We give you glory tonight, Lord, for her. And we ask you, God, to use her. We don't know the